Newsmax.net. Well, as everybody knows who has any connection with the world of media, we have passed the one-year anniversary of the Newtown, Connecticut shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School. 20 students and 6 adults were gunned down there a year ago. Well, a teen in Colorado is lying in a coma tonight after a teen gunman shot her at point-blank range before taking his own life. That, of course, happened even before the commemorations regarding Sandy Hook. And so, here we sit now looking at the same problem, the same circumstance, and the same old debate. The year 2013 has seen an average of more than one school shooting incident per month, from Colorado to Michigan to California to North Carolina to Pennsylvania. And where do we sit? Well, pretty much where we were before, as I said, with pretty much the same laws, the same enforcement, and the same debate taking place. Let's talk about this with return guest and FoxNews.com columnist John Lott, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. At their name is their website, crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. Good evening, John.
Great to talk to you again.
Good to have you on tonight. Your thoughts about the commemoration and what lessons, if any, have been learned? It would seem clearly, first of all, that if any lessons have been learned one way or the other, they haven't been taken to heart since, as far as I can tell, very little has changed.
Yeah, no, I mean, there have been a number of state laws that have gotten passed in the last year. I suppose most states haven't changed their laws one way or the other. My own belief is that the same basic problem that existed before still exists now, but and we can go into that more. But yeah, I think we're basically at an impasse. The different sides focus on states where they feel that they're strongest, and they try to pass laws. So you have Maryland or New York or Connecticut, New Jersey, Colorado, California have passed much stricter gun control laws. And in Maryland, if you count the various fees that you have, it's about $350 to register and license a handgun. Now, in New York, you have to pay about $85 each time you go and buy ammunition. Whether you buy one bullet or you buy 1,000, you have to pay an additional $85 fee for doing it. There are other similar fees in those other states.
Mm-hmm.
There's some states that have made it a little bit easier for people to own guns. I don't think any of those changes are as dramatic as the states that have had the increased fees and burdens for going and getting gun ownership. Nothing like the rules in Maryland are even comparable in the states that have loosened their laws. Most of those will have rules like if you already have a concealed handgun permit, you may not have to go through an additional background check to buy a gun once you've gone through the background check to go and get the permit. And that's basically the types of changes you've seen. You've seen a couple places that have reduced the number of gun-free zones, but that hasn't been a lot of change there.
Now, a CNN poll shows support for any new gun control laws to be at a 25-year low. For some out there, I'm sure that's counterintuitive. You, of course, are known for your research indicating just the opposite. So for those who don't understand that, for those to whom the answer to any gun crime is more gun control, please offer what you have discovered over the years.
Right. Well, I think it's the highest opposition to gun control that they've ever found, which I agree with you, for many would be surprising right now. But you look at the debate that we've had since Sandy Hook, the types of proposals that the president was pushing the hardest would be background checks and more things dealing with mental illness, though the mental illness was definitely kind of fourth tier type things that he was dealing with there as compared to the background checks. Background checks wouldn't have changed the Sandy Hook case, wouldn't have had any impact on it at all, wouldn't have had any impact on any of the other recent ones that we could go and point at either. In the Sandy Hook case, the guy's mother bought the guns. Nobody could have stopped her under any of the proposals that were voted on or even being discussed would have stopped her from buying a gun. The mental health issues, I guess in the last week or so, The Obama administration announced that they were moving another $100 million towards mental health type offerings. But, you know, the thing is, the people that have had mental health issues in these recent spate of cases over the last couple of years were all undergoing treatment. Lanza was undergoing treatment. It's, I have some sympathy for these mental health experts there. You know, it's easy for people to Monday morning quarterback these things, to go and something bad happens and say, well, it should have been obvious. People should have seen something that's there. You know, mental health people have limits on what they're able to go and accomplish and figure out on these things. I wish there was some type of magic wand that they could go and wave where they could easily determine the people who are a threat or not. But you're talking about a tiny, tiny percentage people who are undergoing mental health treatment who are actually a danger to themselves.
This is something that, the FBI says it is now able to do something on, so it might be a good time to hear this report and your reaction to it. Whereas the FBI says its Behavioral Threat Assessment Center has thwarted 150 mass shootings this year alone. Details now from correspondent Bob Orr.
Andre Simmons runs an FBI unit charged with stopping mass shootings before they happen. Three times a week, Simmons and the Behavioral Threat Assessment Center confront a case dealing with a potential shooter, identified through tips from churches, police, campus security, and businesses.
When you study somebody, what is it that jumps off the page at you? Is this is a real problem, perhaps?
What we look at is there a fascination with previous attacks? Is there a overwhelming sense of a downward spiral?
Often in mass shootings, as in the attacks at the Colorado movie theater and the Washington Navy Yard, gunmen reveal warning signs to coworkers, neighbors, or classmates. Simmons says when the FBI gets an early heads up about threatening behavior, analysts work to redirect the subject from violence to mental health treatment, monitoring, or custody. The FBI team researches the subject's background and often interviews the person and acquaintances. In the past year, the behavioral team has tackled 150 cases. Not one resulted in violence.
So this isn't about making arrests or locking people up. This is about stopping events.
While prosecution obviously remains, as the FBI, one of our main priorities, we really think prevention is even better.
Still, the challenge is growing. Friday's gunfire at a Colorado high school is the latest reminder.
These active shooters are continuing, so we're doing everything we can to unite mental health care resources with law enforcement and make a positive change.
Now, in one case, the FBI interviewed a man who had a shooting range in the basement of his home, where he also used pictures of his roommates as targets. We're told the man abused animals. He also collected firearms. But once contacted by the FBI team, he sought mental health treatment.
Correspondent Bob Orr, as John Lott, your thoughts about the FBI claim that they have thwarted 150 mass shootings just this year?
Well, I mean, I don't know what to make of the claim in the sense that these people didn't do something after the treatment, but you're not sure that they would have done something if they hadn't been identified. What I will say is that, look, I mean, I've written on this for a decade and a half. The signs are clear. I agree with many of the things. These guys are fascinated with past attacks. You look at the Lanson case. This guy had put together a 7 by 4.5 foot Excel spreadsheet where he had recorded past mass shootings, had recorded the number of people dead or injured in the attack, and had recorded the amount of media coverage that they had gotten. And he had even gone so far as to graph out the amount of media coverage that you got based on the number of people who you killed. And not surprisingly, he found a very strong relationship that was there. Some of the police who looked at what he had put together said that it rivaled, in their mind, a PhD dissertation in terms of the amount of work they had put on. He'd been apparently working on this for well over 2 years, quite intensively. And he had held up as a model of his the Norwegian killer who had, excluding the bomb deaths, had shot to death 69 people and had wounded 110 other people, holding the horrible record there. And, you know, when you go back and look at these other cases, it's amazing how many times these people focus on past attacks. But the reason why they focus on them is they want to commit suicide, but they want to commit suicide in a way that will get the media attention. They feel that they're not appreciated, and that they want to go out in a way that people will know that they're here in their warped minds.
So they can't just go out and shoot themselves in the middle of a highway median and not kill anybody else, and then that way we'd all know they were here.
Exactly. And they know that the way they can get the most people in the world to know that they were here is if they can kill more people.
Well, we want to take a call here before the break. I would just simply say to people out there contemplating such things, number one, don't do it. Number two, really seriously, don't do it. But number three, if you must, then shoot yourself first. John, in Egg Harbor, New Jersey, good evening.
Hey, what's going on, Jimbo?
Welcome.
I was just wondering pretty much as to what is the president going to propose now that there was another mass shooting that took place in Colorado. What is going to be proposed now for the new gun laws?
All right. What do you expect to be seeing legislatively this year or perhaps in the next session of Congress, John?
Well, the president used his Saturday presidential address, his weekly address, to go and push for more gun control. And at least if that's a harbinger of what he's going to do, he basically laid out two things. One is he alluded to background checks, expanding those, and he also talked about mental illness. And so but the most emphasis was on the background checks, and that sounds like the same bill that was brought up and voted on in April. I assume he's going to try to push for it again.
Yeah, when I noted that there seems to be a 25-year low in support for gun control laws, there still is a majority of Americans in the polls saying that they do favor the background checks.
Well, yeah, I don't know how to read the different polls that are there. I mean, the one sets of polls say, do you favor any stricter gun control laws? And you actually, if you look at the CNN poll, you actually get essentially it's a tie. If you look at some of the older polls that were done in terms of background checks, you could get much higher numbers, as you're alluding to. But then if you ask people a different question, were you happy that the background check bill in April was defeated? You actually get polls that show that a majority were glad that it was defeated. So, you know, maybe there's some idealized background check bill that's out there that they want to go and have. My own guess is the general poll about background checks, without alluding to a specific poll, is really just getting people to answer the question, do you want to keep criminals from getting guns? And when you ask them that, they say, sure, I want to stop them from doing that. Everybody agrees that criminals should stop from getting guns. The sticky part comes when you actually go and say, well, how are we going to do it, and is the current system doing it, or would an expansion of it?
All right. We will pause briefly and be back with more in just a moment. This is the Jimbo Haddon Show. Glad you're with us tonight as we're talking to John Lott, economist and author, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, and a FoxNews.com columnist. He's held research or teaching positions at the University of Chicago, UCLA, Wharton, the Business School, Stanford University, and Rice University, former chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission, and is a leading expert on gun control. Mike in Winchester, Virginia. Good evening.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know why they can't call it psychosis violence instead of gun violence. I own several guns. I have never yet killed anybody. And when they call it gun violence, they're saying that this inanimate 5-ounce piece of metal sitting on a shelf can magically make somebody pick it up and start shooting people. Right. If the gun grabbers have their way, the psychos will just start loading trucks with fertilizer and diesel fuel.
All right. John?
Well, I understand where you're coming from. I guess I would phrase things a little bit differently than you. I think it's important you have to recognize that guns do make it easier for people to kill other people. The response, though, I think, is to say they also make it easier for people to protect themselves and prevent bad things from happening. The question that concerns us is what's the net effect. Now, you're right. There are other ways that people can go and kill people. They can make bombs like you're talking about Friday's attack at the school. The guy apparently had three bombs with him. When you had the Columbine attack, the people had a number of homemade grenades that they used that they actually threw around and had other larger explosive devices. So those things can happen. But surely one has to recognize that compared to many types of things that you can use, guns do make it easier. I agree with you on another point, though, and that is, look, we should care about total murders that are there, not just necessarily how the murders are committed, whether they go and use a bomb or a gun or what have you, but what can we do in order to try to lower total amount of deaths that occur there? And that's one thing I guess I don't understand why gun control advocates just focus only on one type of death and don't look at both. But I still think it's a mistake not to acknowledge that guns do make it easier relative to some other types of weapons to kill people.
True enough. My guess would be, and thank you for your call, Mike, my guess would be that one reason gun control advocates don't do as you suggest is because it might be, politically inconvenient for them to do so. I mean, in many cases, it might be inconvenient for them to point out that a lot of the violence stems from broken families and this sort of thing, which, again, might not be the message they want to send. In other words, they're not just concerned about letting the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, you could be right. It's hard for me to get into people's minds about why they, make certain types of arguments or not.
Yeah.
What I can say, though, is that if you look around the world, the United States clearly doesn't have the highest gun violence, and it definitely doesn't have anywhere near remotely to the highest murder rates in the world. I mean, we're well below the mean in terms of murder rates. And one thing that's kind of picking up on what you're saying about the characteristics of the murders, one thing you can't get away from is the fact that 3% of the counties in the United States account for over 70% of the murders. So you're broadcasting from Washington, D.C. right now. If you ever see one of the maps that the Washington Post will put out once a year, the murders aren't even evenly distributed around Washington, D.C. They're very heavily concentrated in a few areas in the city. And that's basically drug gang violence that's there. And it's basically drug gang violence when you go and look at these other places. I mean, one thing I'll point to that the Obama administration put out, and that is in 2009, they put out a report saying that about 80% of violent crime in the United States was gang-related, and that the vast majority of that was drug gang-related. And I may not agree with the precise number. They had to make certain
assumptions. I'll tell you, we're coming up on a break that doesn't move, John, so let's come back and look some more at that study, shall we? 1-866-50-JIMBO, the number. We'll be back in just a moment. Back to the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. As we have observed, unfortunately, the anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, with another shooting out in Colorado, where a Colorado teen lies in a coma tonight. That seems to have been the norm in recent times. Of course, obviously, this type of violence in schools gets coverage all over the place, whereas if somebody else gets gang-banged dead on the streets of a major city, we frankly sweep it under the rug. Wish that wouldn't happen. So in terms of the actual number of deaths, John Lott, our guest, has considerable points to make here. We simply don't treat the two the same. You were talking about the administration and the blame to be placed on gang-related drug violence, John. Please go ahead, and then we'll take another call.
Sure. Well, I mean, You can't get away from the fact that the vast majority of violent crime and the vast majority of murders are simply involving drug gangs fighting against each other to control drug turf that was there. You know, it kind of reminds one, you know, the highest murder rate we ever had in the United States was in 1932, the last year of Prohibition. As soon as Prohibition ended, we saw about a 60% drop in murder rates. And, you know, when you have something valuable that's illegal, people fight against each other in order to try to control it, and you also have some collateral damage that occurs from as a result of that. But that implies a limit, though, on gun control, because just as it's very hard to go and try to stop illegal gangs from bringing in the drugs that they sell, it's very difficult to stop them from getting a hold of the weapons that they need to protect those drugs. I mean, the same ability for them to bring in the drugs. I mean, they're not going to, if tomorrow I could wave a wand and all illegal drugs and all guns disappeared in the United States, what would it take? A day before illegal drugs started coming back in? A week? And I assume at the same time they'd be bringing in the weapons that they'd need to protect that valuable property.
Yeah. I want to come back to that thought in a second here, but right now let's talk to Richard in the Eureka, California. Good evening, Richard.
Howdy.
Hello.
Yeah, I've read his book before and stuff, but you know what? A lot of things, there's two points I wanted to make.
Sure.
One of them is they don't give out a lot of the, in the major news media in this country, what happened in Canada, England, and Australia when they banned guns. The crime rate with guns skyrocketed.
Right.
And the other thing was nobody ever says anything about what's happened in Switzerland. They don't have the crime rate, and everyone has a gun.
Okay.
And that was like that. Hitler did not invade Switzerland in World War II because of that.
Your thoughts on both of those, John, regarding comparisons with countries like Canada and Britain and countries like Switzerland, if there are any others like Switzerland?
Right, sure. Well, I understand the comparisons that people make. It's really hard to make good comparisons across countries. What I will say is that of the first three countries, only one really banned guns. That was Britain. They banned handguns in January 1997. And the caller is exactly right. After the ban, you saw a huge increase in murders, increased by about 50%. Now, still it was lower than the United States, but relative to what it had been before, it increased. And that's a phenomenon that the caller is right. We do see worldwide. Every time there's a ban on guns, not just in Washington, D.C. or Chicago, but every place that's done it, you see big increases in murder rates and violent crimes. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is when you ban guns, it's the law-abiding good citizens who turn them in, not the criminals. And if you disarm law-abiding citizens relative to criminals, you're going to see increases in violent crime. And as far as Switzerland, you know, you also have Israel, for example. Israel probably has the highest gun possession rate for people any place in the world. They both have very low murder rates and violent crime. And, you know, so, but I think there could be other things that people could point to that are the reasons for the differences in those countries. So I think the best way to look at it is when you see a big change in a country, you know, it bans guns or it gets rid of a ban. And when you see that, they go in the direction that the caller is saying.
Mm-hmm. And again, we certainly treat some deaths in this country as worthy of wall-to-wall coverage and others not. Quite frankly, if you're just somebody who's a victim in a major urban area where gun violence happens all the time, it pretty much gets put under the category of, oh, well.
Well, it's particularly if it's drug gangs. So,
mm-hmm.
For example, a lot of these school shootings that you've been referring to are actually gang fights that are occurring. And, you know, and so the ones that are where it's the person going in there and just trying to kill as many people as possible, that obviously gets a huge amount of attention. But if you have a gang fight, many of these school shootings actually don't occur on school property. They may involve students, you know, across the street or down the block or something like that, but they're still counted as school shootings by in the numbers that you were referring to. And you know, it's these gang issues, they just don't generate the same type of sympathy as these other types of shootings do.
Mm-hmm. To Savannah in the Memphis on the Jim Bohannon Show. Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. Teacher here. I have finally read about what Israel does to protect their children and their schools. First of all, they're proactive. And if we are going to have killing fields in our schools, and this is going to continue, I know there are people who are unbalanced. I know that there are people that get upset. But Columbine, Littleton, all of these other places, the things that happen, I know there are people that say they think we ought to have teachers armed. I've got a better idea. Make sure the doors are so no one can get in the schools, because not all schools follow safety measures the way they're supposed to.
Well, of course, that came up in that movie about John Clark, the Philadelphia school principal. I can't think of the name.
Oh,
Stand By Me, starring Morgan Freeman, in which the fire code said that you couldn't lock the doors and the windows, when obviously fire is an unfortunate fact of life and a problem. But you're not going to worry about fire when the more immediate problem is all of these gangs. I mean, sometimes you simply have to apply common sense and protect yourself from the most immediate, imminent threat.
Right.
John?
Right. No, look, I understand. Here's the problem that you face often with just trying to block doors or windows or what have you, and that is these killers plan these attacks years or at least many months in advance. And when somebody's plotting for something like that long in advance, they can often find some crack that you have in security in order to get in. You know, there was in November, Ron Noble, the head of Interpol, which is kind of like Europe's FBI, said, look, there's two ways we can stop these types of mass shootings. One, we can either secure an area, or two, we can let the victims go and defend themselves, because we can't simply have police all over the place to always protect people. And he said he's finally changed his mind on this. You know, for years, he was basically, along with most other people, we just secure the areas. But he said, look, you look at these attacks, and you look how long these people plan on these things. He says it's simply impossible to really secure these areas that are there. And that he's come to the fact that basically we have to consider letting the victims be able to defend themselves, because if you don't and you aren't able to secure these areas, they actually serve as magnets. These people want to kill as many victims as possible. They want to go to some place where they can kill people without being stopped. And, you know, you can put doors that are there, but if the person, you know, if there's some crack in the door or somebody can open the door from the inside and let them in there, or what have you. I mean, there's so many different options that you have on those types of things that you're in a really bad situation, because now you've closed the doors and they've gotten in and you have no way to hide or protect yourself. And what do you do at that point?
I would like to say something as a teacher.
Sure.
Sure. I've been a
teacher. Those doors are shut in, shall we say, areas that they don't want people to enter the building, and there'll be a sign on the door that says all entries must be made through the main office. Okay, those doors, they have fire bars on them. But that young man that shot Colorado, what is it, Littleton, he just walked into the building. He didn't have trouble getting in the building. He parked in the parking lot, and he came in the door, the ingress from the parking lot.
Right.
Some schools don't allow that. I mean, the doors are locked from the inside. And yes, you're right, someone might let somebody in. We know that's how children, when they have security checks, that they leave something with somebody else. And somebody comes around after school has started and passes something through a window.
Right,
or someone opens the door and they pass in what they want to pass in.
Okay.
There's not a problem that cannot be solved. This is the country that put men on the moon.
Yeah.
There is a problem. And if it means putting someone at a door to make sure that no one goes in and out of that door unless they are supposed to, that's
here's
what we're going to
here's
have
the problem
to
that you have. You look at some of the places where we've had people go in through the front door, like Red Lake, Minnesota is one example, and there's others that you can go and point to. Attackers have huge strategic advantages. You go and put a guard there, even an armed guard at the front. He's in uniform. It's a boring job. The guy's going to be sitting there for months. It's hard for somebody in that type of job to be alert and awake and on guard at all points in time.
I understand it, but I'd like
just
to
just one second here. One second.
One more thing.
Yeah.
But how hard it is, how hard it is. I come from a law enforcement family. I know how hard everything is. But I will say something to you. Terrorists are going to seize upon this one day.
Exactly.
Have coordinated attacks, God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this is something that has got to be taken care of. You're talking about defenseless teachers and children, and if they come and blow up the building and come in the door.
That's pretty much the point, I think, Savannah, that they should not be defenseless. I'd be happy to have you two continue the conversation, but it will have to be after these messages. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO as we are talking with John Lott, who is the man behind the Crime Prevention Research Center online at theirname.org, and Savannah, teacher in Memphis, who had called in. And I guess just to reconstruct the conversation, Savannah, that it would be great to obviously hire as many cops as we can, as many security guards as we can, lock as many doors as we can, but at the end of the day, it still is important and, in fact, perhaps necessary to allow people to defend themselves.
I will tell you that I can use a gun. I would be one teacher that if they trained me and told me to pack a gun, I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't hesitate to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I am a different kind of teacher because not everybody is into arms the way that I have been all my life.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with what is being said is that we have a problem. We have got to solve it. Children and teachers are vulnerable. We had a lockdown at my school. I had already gone through several drills with the students, and I told them, I said, you will get on the inside wall. We'll pull all the shades down. I had a device that I put over the window into my classroom.
A device? What is it?
Something to put over the window. So if someone
a shade of some sort that blocked the view. Okay.
And I said, and you will be quiet as mice. And we had a lockdown. I didn't have to tell those kids to do anything. They got up orderly. They walked over to the inside wall. I pulled that piece down on the glass. And students walked up and pulled the shades down, and we were quiet.
Well,
and I said,
that's good. I mean, but again, you know, and I hope that would be the way every school would direct this. Again, I think that John's point is, and I want John to respond here, is simply that doing all of that still doesn't change the fact that to really have any hope of security, you're going to have to at least allow schools the option of arming teachers and or administrators.
We have enough retired military people in this country that could be vetted, checked out, and volunteer to be guards in schools.
All right. Well, then let's ask John some thoughts about that. John?
Yeah. No, sure. Look, I've been an academic most of my adult life. I understand a lot of the concerns that you raise. I mean, it's interesting you raised Israel to begin with. The way Israel has dealt with this is that they allow staff and faculty to go and have guns with them at the schools because they realize that you need to be able to protect all things. Terrorists have huge advantages. If you have uniformed armed guards at a place, they can either avoid those people or kill them first. And Israel, for years, kept on trying to just say, well, if we just put more police, more military on the street, we'll stop them. But they realized that they didn't have infinite money. And they realized that if the terrorists were just patient enough, they would find some place where a police officer or a military person wasn't there, or they would find a place where they could kill them first before it. And some of your discussions about having, a front entrance where people are going in. If you block everything else, they can pick the time and the place to go and do their attack. Look, the feeling that you've mentioned about helplessness, I mean, I've unfortunately, because of the type of research that I've done, I've talked to, it must be over 75 people that have been present at these types of things. And the feeling of utter helplessness is just overwhelming when you talk to these people. They have nightmares for years because of the feeling of helplessness that they had. And when you're talking about police response time that can be considered extremely fast at 10 minutes, it can often be 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, and then the additional time before they enter into the building.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lifetime. I mean, if you go and have your kids in your classroom be quiet and somebody's going from room to room, I don't know what you're going to do in order to try to stop them in that situation.
The time factor is clearly a factor, as it is, by the way, with us, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, it's Jimmy Fallon. Here's a preview of tonight's Late Night.
I just want to bring him out now.
Love
him so much. I was running by because I was coming out to do a monologue. And I was running by, and I ran by his dressing room. And I said, I love you, Bill Cosby. And he goes, who cares? This guy, I love this guy as well. More trouble for Toronto Mayor Rob Ford.
Come on.
After he admitted to smoking crack, Ford is now threatening to sue his former staffers for saying that he once hired a prostitute. Ford was like, that is a lie. I did it way more than once. I have a reputation to uphold. I heard that the police were called out to Justin Bieber's house on Friday. Yeah, he was throwing a party with Snoop Lion. Apparently it got too loud or something like that. But, of course, Snoop ran out the back, not to avoid the cops. He just didn't want to be seen partying with Justin Bieber.
That's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon tonight on NBC.
Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show. John Lott, our guest. He is the founder and president of CrimePreventionResearchCenter.org and a columnist with FoxNews.com. If you could set gun policy for the country and or mental health policy and or background check policy, if all of this was in your hands, what would you do?
Well, I guess I wish... I wish background checks were a magic bullet. I don't really think they are. I mean, I don't mind doing it as a placebo for most people, but I think it's hard to stop criminals from getting a hold of these guns if they have their minds to it. I agree with Ron Noble from Interpol. I think we're at a point where it's important to give individuals the options to defend themselves, because when you don't, you create actual magnets for criminals to go and have an incentive to go and attack individuals because they know that they will have an easier job doing that. And so I would seriously consider trying to get rid of as many of these types of gun-free zones as we can. We may not want to get rid of all of them. I could imagine that. But I think some of these things, you know, these things about gun-free school zones, it's not something that's been around forever. I mean, basically, this goes back to the 1995 federal law that was there. We had places and states that, like Connecticut, for example, since we're talking about Newtown, prior to December 1995, a person or a staff member or even a teacher in Connecticut who had a concealed handgun permit was allowed to have it on school property.
All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap. John Lott, stay on the line. We'll speak off air again. Fox News columnist. He is founder and president of CrimePreventionResearchCenter.org. And this discussion obviously will not go away. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.